It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk about Kenobi Part 3. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Welcome back, folks. I'm super stoked for this one.
Hell yeah. And joining us today is friend of the pod, friend of both of us as well, outside of the pod, and recurring guest, Jeff. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Really glad to talk on this one.
Hell yeah. I knew that as soon as I watched this one, I was like, Jeff's a lucky motherfucker for getting to be on for this one, I feel like. But I don't want to spoil too much of my opinions on it. I know that we're all excited to get into the specifics of Kenobi Part 3. This is part of our mini-series on the Kenobi series where we'll go through each week the new episode. So the episodes of the show drop every Wednesday, and our episodes will drop the following day on Thursday. So if you're listening to this the day of, it's Thursday, June 2nd, right now, and you're enjoying our bonus episode. This is our regular bonus episode of the week on GDT, where on Thursdays we have a new TV show, a new movie, something else relevant, or a guest on to talk about one of their favorite movies. That all happens on our Thursday episodes. And like I said, while the Kenobi series is dropping, that's what those episodes will be on. So stay tuned for those each week. On top of that, we have our full episode here at GDT that releases every Friday, where we interview an independent filmmaker or someone else related with the independent filmmaking or just filmmaking scene. Those episodes are very informative. We have great guests on who give us amazing insight on so much about filmmaking in general. So if you're interested in how films get made or just want to know about indie filmmaking, check those episodes out. Then we have two other bonus episodes a week, one on Monday where we talk about our short film called Nostalgia. I've gone into it on past episodes, but if you're wondering what the hell I'm talking about, check out our Monday episodes. Those are hosted by Nyatva, and he talks to the cast and crew of the short film Nostalgia. Then on Tuesdays, we have our MCU bonus episodes where we talk about the MCU with our MCU crew. Did I say MCU enough right there? We have myself, Jalen, Mac, and the host of those episodes, Chris, CB, who all join on Tuesdays to talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going movie by movie through it. We are up to Iron Man 2, and we'll continue with Thor next Tuesday. So if you're into Marvel, those episodes are for you. But if you're a superhero person in general, whenever there's a new superhero TV show or movie, those episodes will be replaced by that new property. So, for example, when Thor 4 drops or when The Boys drops, we'll be recapping season 3 of The Boys and we'll be discussing Thor 4 on those Tuesday episodes, and we'll just postpone whatever the regularly scheduled MCU episode was for the following week. So those episodes are going through the MCU, and then anytime there's a new Marvel, DC, or independent superhero property that is released, we'll be talking about those. If you're listening to this right now, you might be wondering where our Iron Man 2 episode is because it was supposed to drop on Tuesday. Well, a little sneak peek into what happened behind the scenes. Tuesday, May 31st was GDT's birthday, our 1 year anniversary of releasing episodes and showing them to you guys. So we took a break. We decided not to tell you guys because it was a very last minute decision, but that episode will be dropping this Saturday as a little bonus. So in our Tuesday episode was skipped this week, but it'll be on Saturday. That is on Iron Man 2. And then next week, you'll just go back to being on Tuesdays. So stay tuned for that. And those are our four weekly episodes. And then also on top of that, we have our Sunday Movie Squad episode that drops the first Sunday of every month, which means this Sunday you get one of those episodes. We are talking about Top Gun Maverick on that new episode this Sunday, June 5th. We will be discussing that with myself, Stevie P, John, and Kari, who are all part of the Sunday Movie Squad. So if you've seen that movie, get excited for that episode. If you haven't, go to the theater. Check it out and stay tuned for our episode on Sunday. Those are all of our episodes that we release on GDT. And if you're excited for those, stay tuned for them. And if you want to go check out what we have that we've released in the past, check out our back catalog as well. So today, like I said, we are talking about Kenobi Part 3, which was released yesterday morning. Because we're talking about Kenobi and because it's a big Star Wars property, I'm going to start right now by giving us a big spoiler warning. Spoilers ahead for Kenobi Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3, and spoilers for anything Star Wars related. That means everything is on the table. table, folks. We could talk about the comics. We could talk about TV shows, animated or live action. We could talk about all the movies, even the mainline ones and even the non-mainline ones like Solo and Rogue One. Anything we want, anything we know about is fair game. And that means Gardner can bring up literally anything because he's read the books. He's read everything. He knows everything. So watch out for that. If there's anything you're super worried about being spoiled, turn this off now, catch up on your Star Wars lore, and then get back to us. For everyone else, that was your Star Wars and Kenobi spoiler warning. So, Jeff, you're here with us today to talk about part three, but obviously we've already discussed part one and two here on GDT. So the fans know what me and Gardner have to say about the first two episodes of this show, but they don't know what you have to say. So I'm sure they're itching to hear what you thought about the first two episodes. If you want to tell us anything you have to say about them, please let us know now.
So I think I've liked it a lot. I think I have mostly felt some of the same thoughts you guys have. Like, it's very much the Star Wars story that's missing that you want to hear. I know everyone loves Obi-Wan. I mean, it's following up on the prequels in modern day film technology and CGI and things like that. I've had a few complaints. Some of the chase scenes, like, a little bit, you know, cheesy, doesn't look like everything. A couple tweaks here and there that could make it a little better. But overall, I think there's been a couple things that I've liked that I've seen people complaining about. I'm not sure if these are both. One is I really like annoying child Leia. I think she's, like, actually a really good character, because if you've been around smart little kids like that, that is just exactly how they act. And it's pretty much, if she was, like, just going with the flow and doing everything Obi-Wan wanted, it wouldn't have made for a good episode two. So that's my big thing. And obviously, you know, whenever you work with, like, child actors, there's always a little bit of, like, you know, they're only so old, only so mature. Like, how much can they really, you know, capture the emotion of the scene? But I actually thought that, like, that actress, you know, for how, you know, maybe she's 10 years old, I'm not sure, but she's actually doing a good job being, like, really annoying to Obi-Wan when he's just there to save her. And so I kind of actually like that dynamic. But overall, I think I've really liked it. And I mean, as I kind of mentioned in my very brief intro, like, really excited to come on for this episode. I keep lucking out and getting really good episodes with you guys. But man, this was just, ooh, this was a good one.
Do you have, before we get into anything with part three, do you have any big, like, predictions that you had when you were watching those first two? Or even, like, anything that you were looking for that maybe, I don't want to get into too much of what actually happens in part three, if you know what I mean. But, like, if there's any big overarching predictions that you have, if not, it's fine.
I guess one more thing on the end of episode two, he is running away from the third sister. You know, he's Obi-Wan and Leia are, like, kind of ducking behind things. And it's like, oh, there's no way she's possibly going to let Obi-Wan just kind of hobble over to this, like, cargo freighter and get away. And I kind of think Star Wars has some of this problem where it's like, show me, don't tell me later. Like, the whole thing there is, like, she's fighting the other Grand Inquisitor and she's knows they're going to try and take the credit and is actually like, I would rather Obi-Wan temporarily get away now if that means I have to kill you to get the credit. And I just don't think you fully, like, got that from the scene. And it looks a little corny, like Obi-Wan just kind of sneaks away and is like, oh, look at me, I'm on the freighter. But I actually really like the scene. And it's like, I don't know, I wish it could have been done slightly different. But that, like, I actually really like her character so far. And I think, like, there's a lot of potential there. And I think that's where probably most of the predictions will come from. But mostly, I think things that will involve episode three. So we'll hold off for that.
Cool. And I think that this is a perfect time to bring up the weekly Star Wars hatred and news that was in everyone's face this week, which we obviously here on GDT predicted the hate for little girl Leia because of, like, Jake Lloyd in the past. I guess we should have seen this coming as well when it comes to the third sister and Moses Ingram, because she obviously has gone public about hatred that she's gotten, which is unsurprising, but sucks. And it is good that we're now seeing not only her fellow actors, but also Star Wars as a brand get behind her, which companies do what's best for them and in their best interest. And I think it's definitely just, like, a move now that's, like, they realize it's in their best interest to back up their actors. It's not really from the goodness of their heart, in my opinion. But I think we want to make sure that, you know, all our listeners are on the same page as we are, that even if you don't think the character is that great, like, none of that's okay. And I don't think any of us are even hating on the character or the actor either. I don't think that. And I think that maybe, like, earlier on, like, the acting wasn't as good as it is now. Like, there's no question in my mind that she's a perfectly fine actor, but there was, like, certain scenes where I was like, oh, is that, like, maybe they used the wrong take there, for example. So, like, I can understand maybe where some of, like, a criticism could come from. But again, you have to be, like, fair about everything. And definitely racism is not okay. And also, like, going after any actors is not okay for, like, a performance, but going after it like that is definitely the wrong way to do it. So that's our stance on that. We've kind of made our stance about, like, child actors, because, like, it's never okay to go be talking to a child about their performance and anything. And I will say that we'll get into it, but I think that Forbes, I agree with you that actually, again, as this has progressed, I think that especially in this episode, episode, we'll talk about the acting of, I don't know the actor's name who plays Leia, but very, I thought, convincing in this episode. And there's certain parts that I'll talk about. So now that we're getting into this episode, let's talk about our broad initial thoughts on part three. We'll obviously get later on into the more detailed specifics of the show, but let's talk about just what our thoughts were. And like, I mean, there's a couple fuck yeah moments for sure, right, fellas? So Forbes, we're going to start with you, and as our guest, you get to tell us what your initial broad thoughts of Kenobi part three are.
So I really liked it. As you know, as I mentioned, I just think that this, and especially the second half, was getting back to, this is not a like a filler show. This is not a one-off, like Boba Fett with the Tusken Raiders is cool, but maybe it's not, you know, the most pivotal thing to move the Star Wars franchise forward. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi on a planet protecting Leia Organa, and all this sort of chaos that happens in the first part, you know, is, I thought, some good stuff. Like, I thought some of the, you know, scenes with the stormtroopers were like a little menacing and stuff. But then, I mean, without trying to get too much into the second half, I mean, the scene with Obi-Wan and Darth Vader is just, come on, like, that's exactly what you're looking for. He is just absolutely out there playing with his food. The scenes where you have Obi-Wan and his lightsaber, and because of the reflection off it, you can't really see who's there. And like, you, as like watching it, I was like a little scared. I was like, holy crap, this is like, he's going to be coming around the corner all of a sudden. And I think it happened. There was two of those moments, like, and just the Vader lines are great. Again, I don't want to get too far forward, but some of the Vader lines about, so much better delivered than like the corny puns, like, I hope you don't choke on your aspirations and that kind of stuff. Like, it wasn't like that corny Vader. It was like menacing, terrifying hate in his heart Vader. And I loved it.
Hell yeah. Definitely excited to get into, like we all said, the specifics of it. But Gardner, let's get to you. What are your broad initial thoughts of Kenobi part three?
I think this is the strongest episode in the series so far. I was hooked from beginning to end. I was not expecting that battle to happen this early, but I'm so glad it did. I know for a fact we're going to get another one. That's just got to happen. Everything worked for me in this episode. I really didn't think there was a low point. There were some low points in episodes one and two. And I feel like that was like, we're getting the story started. And now that we're at the halfway point, we've gotten through the first act, right? If we're going to talk about this in like movie terms, but now we're in the second act. We're getting to the complications. We're getting to the interesting character dramas. We're getting to see more of the infighting between the Inquisitors, which is something that I had a big problem with. I still think it's kind of a problem. Like, I want them to do more to explain who the Inquisitors are, what their relationships are to one another, and how they're all kind of supposed to be like spoiled brats vying for the Grand Inquisitor position, and like Vader is manipulating them and fucking with them. I think we didn't really get much of that in the first two episodes. So their motivations and everything was kind of ethereal, but I thought that was much better handled in this episode. There wasn't really any cheesiness. There were some moments that like genuinely gave me chills that we'll get into later. But yeah, I'm this is like, we talked about fuck yeah moments. For me, this is like a fuck yeah episode, dude. Like, it carried out the entire way through.
Yeah, so I would say for me, this episode is a perfect litmus test for what are you here for when it comes to Star Wars. Because if this one didn't do it for you, in my opinion, then that's perfectly fine, for sure. But we're looking for different things then. Because, and I think definitely you and I, Gardner, and I don't really like to put words in your mouth, but I'm certainly not going to put them in Forbes' mouth because he's only just a guest. But I'll give you guys both the opportunity to either tell me I'm wrong about saying this or that you agree. But, you know, when you're watching a Star Wars film, especially when it's not one of like the original trilogies or TV shows too, but any Star Wars property, you're not necessarily judging it on the same scale as like when you're trying to watch, I don't know, whatever you think your top five movies of the year will be, like when you're thinking about who you would give the Oscar to, right? If you were in charge of the Oscars, right? It's different because I love Star Wars and it gives me the biggest fuck yeah moments ever. And it's really, it's that property for me. And Marvel has gotten there to me too in certain aspects, but it'll never be, because like I've always said on this podcast and I've said it to other people, like The Phantom Menace was that first movie for me. That was, we always say like favorite movies can change over your life, and right now I don't have one, but the first movie that I ever considered my favorite was The Phantom Menace, and like it got me all in. And it was like, my dad loved the original trilogy, so it was perfect. I mean, we've all off air talked about our love for Star Wars at length, but my point of all this is that like when The Force Awakens dropped, I fucking love that movie. And a lot of people have complaints about it. Like, some people don't like the retread, this, that, and the other. And there's perfectly fine complaints to have about the movie. For me, it was like, fuck yeah, we're back. Never thought this would happen. Let's go. I love this. I love the new characters, like Rey and Finn, for example, especially. I mean, I like Poe too, but for me, it was the two of them were my two guys for sure. And I loved it. I wouldn't have given it the award for anything that year, is my point, right? So I think that we're probably all coming from it from that same point of view. And if you want to get on Twitter and like, criticize certain aspects of the filmmaking behind it. And like maybe parts of that is because they're pumping out more shows and Marvel's more responsible for having this issue than Star Wars is. But Star Wars has it a little bit too. And like the volume has its problems in certain aspects as well. So there's that. But all that to be said, like there's criticisms that can be made for sure about this episode as well too, about how maybe it looks or about how like, I don't know, writing, whatever you want to say. I don't have the complaints, so I couldn't tell you what they are because I fucking loved it. My point is, if this didn't do it for you, then we're not coming to this from the same point of view. You know what I mean? I think all of us were like, fuck yeah, Ewan McGregor's back as Kenobi, Hayden Christensen's back as, well, not Anakin anymore, Darth Vader. And we are in a part of Star Wars that we've never gotten to experience before, and we're seeing things that we didn't know happened. And we're just, we'll get into the specifics, but like, I want to talk about just the broad, that fuck yeah feeling that you really were talking about too, Gardner, when you're talking about this is a fuck yeah episode. If this didn't do it for you, then you're not really all in on the fandom part of it. You know what I mean? Which is fine. You don't have to be. But there's a certain part where it's like, all right, you got to love Star Wars. You would love this, I feel like, if you were into that aspect of Star Wars, which you don't have to be. But like, if you were super into like the prequels of Ewan McGregor, like the show was never going to be for you if this episode didn't do it for you, is basically what I'm trying to say. So long ramble there, but I would love to hear what you guys think about that. Just the general like feeling of the episode.
I think that's a great point. Star Wars is fantasy. It's escapism. It's fun. It's mythos and family stories of generations. And it's not meant to be some serious art house drama, like you were saying, Duncan. Like, I wouldn't nominate it for Oscars. I like to go live in that world and experience that world and see new planets and characters that I love and new characters also. And this series has done a tremendous job at that so far. And yeah, you can nitpick like, oh, I didn't really like this shot composition here, or that you mentioned, Duncan, the volume. I do think there are times where the volume is really showing its limits, you know, where it's like all these scenes where like people walk about, you know, 20 feet and then they stop and talk and then we cut to the next scene. Does the scenery and everything look good? Yeah, but I'd like to see a larger scope, you know, and you're not going to get that necessarily with, especially within the TV series. In the movies, I think you got a bigger budget. They can do that. They can build bigger sets and everything. Besides the point, this is delivering for people who love Star Wars, people who love the prequel trilogy, especially. And I see people complaining about, like you said, Forbes, like there's people complaining about like little girl Leia and stuff. And first of all, I think she is, I mean, that's Leia. That is, her personality matches perfectly. So if you don't like this portrayal, then you don't like the character of Leia.
Right.
But it's like, this is a sequel to the prequels. And those movies were corny as hell. And they had a lot of goofy shit for kids in them. Even though Revenge of the Sith is dark. Yeah, oh, this is a movie for kids. A guy gets burned alive. Okay, whatever. It's still for kids. It just has dark elements. And I think you can nitpick all you want, but when it comes down to it, this is good fucking Star Wars, man. I don't know, Forbes, what do you think?
No, I completely agree. I think that Disney is making these films and they're trying to cast a wide net of both Star Wars fans and general moviegoers, Marvel fans that might come over to the Star Wars, like all these different types of people that like different types of movies. And they have had some films that have not fully been what any group might have been looking for. And they've been some film that maybe everyone would like partially, but still have their own concerns about. But to me, I think I agree with what you're saying, Duncan. Like, if you didn't really enjoy the second half of this episode, then like the Star Wars universe might just not be your thing. And that's, you know, totally fine. But this was, to me, this is like, you know, Darth Vader arriving on Hoth in episode 5. This is like Anakin getting off the, I can't remember what that Low Republic ship is called, at the end of episode 3. Like all these like, you know, huge moments before a big lightsaber battle between one of two people. This was like what the original Star Wars and the prequels did so well. And like, yeah, like you're saying, you can nitpick small things. It's not, you know, a major budget movie. There's a little bit here and there, but this second half was just so good for me.
Yeah. And I also think that it would be fine if you are a Star Wars fan and this still didn't do it for you, because there could be, for example, a Star Wars fan who's just sick of seeing these people in this time period, which is a fine complaint to have. I don't have that complaint personally. I really wanted to see more Kenobi, especially Ewan McGregor. So, I mean, I've said that a million times on this podcast already in 2.5 episodes that we've done. So you guys get that. I'm into this Kenobi stuff. But my point is that like, there are certain people who don't care about this time period or any more about these characters. They've learned enough about them and they don't care. And that's fine. But then this show isn't for you, is my point. And I think that's what we're all saying here. But if you were going into this like fairly and saying like giving it a chance, I don't know how this episode didn't do it for you then, right? And that's kind of where I'm coming from. And also, one more thing I did want to say was, that I have to eat my words now after seeing this episode where I said that maybe this would have been better as a movie. Absolutely not, because then you, this, I don't know where this goes into that story then, if you even have this, or if there's like less afterwards maybe, so like whatever we're going to come next that we're about to see maybe wouldn't be part of that movie, or they'd have to shorten some things. I now I'm like, give me more. I want 10 episodes, which is kind of how I always come at these shows, because if it's like, if I really like it, I always want more. So I'm like disappointed, not disappointed in a way where I think they did a bad job, but disappointed where I'm like, oh, just give me more because I want to watch more, which is what you want. You want to leave them wanting more. So that's good. But I had, now my last opening thought would be that definitely series over movie. I'm glad they did this because it just means more Obi-Wan or more Ben. He's clearing people up on that one already in this episode. So let's get into what happens in part three of Kenobi. We start with something we've never seen before, or never seen this much of before, with Darth Vader suiting up to the point of limbs being screwed on, or I don't know, screwed on, whatever, put on. I don't know if there was actually screws in there, what they were, but you know what I'm saying. And all the time in the past, this would be obscured either because they didn't have the stuff to make it look that cool yet, because it was back in the 80s, or it was something they didn't want to show you yet, I guess. They just haven't shown us that yet. So something cool to start off with, especially after the tease at the end of episode two. So do you guys have any thoughts just on seeing Hayden suiting up like that?
So I actually thought it was pretty interesting from like a lore perspective, because you always hear about the suit is almost like a torture device that's medically necessary for Vader to survive. And then I guess in the same time when he's not in the suit, he's in like the little back to pad just healing up. So it was kind of interesting from that perspective. Like you never really hear like, what does he do when he goes back from his lightsaber battles? And so you see this really awesome scene where, like you're saying, they're almost just assembling him like a Lego to go out and find Ben Kenobi. So no, I really appreciated that scene. Thought it was a great start. It was almost cool too, because it was like Obi-Wan was seeing it in his, you know, Force mind, you know, like once he heard that it was alive, is like he has enough power now that he knows it's there to like look for it. And I thought at least that was the impression I was getting, that he was like kind of seeing it himself.
I got that impression too, with the way that the last episode ended, where Obi-Wan says Anakin, and then we hard cut to Vader in the back of the tank. I think that's definitely kind of what they're going for, is that Obi-Wan can, if not see, you know, in 4K, that he can kind of sense what's going on. And I just loved this sequence, because everything with Vader this whole episode felt like a horror movie, like a slasher, you know, like he's like Jason walking towards you. And this did such a great job of like establishing that dread of like how horrifying he looks, and like how horrifying the condition he's in is, and how that drives his hate and his anger, and how that channels into his body language and the way he fights later in the episode. Masterful way to start it off.
And here's one thing that, and it's not a criticism of the episode or Star Wars at all, but something I always have an issue with when you have like such an evil force like Darth Vader or just the Empire in general. But he's talking to the third sister, right? And he's like, you won't live to regret your failures if you don't bring him to me. It's like, all right, you know, the good guys don't do that, right? They don't murder you if you fuck up, right? And it's like, I get that's good motivation. Like they definitely don't want to fuck up because she believes him for sure. But it's like, damn, that's a toxic workplace. You cannot be doing that to your employees, man. Like, that can't be the best way to get them working as hard as possible. It's just interesting because it's always like, I wonder like how the Joker gets goons, for example, in Gotham. It's like, dude, you do not want to be working for that guy. Pick the Penguin or anyone else, dude. He's probably not going to murder you for fun. Joker, I don't know. I feel like I always use the Joker as like my example for anything, even when it's not Star Wars or superhero related. So it sounds like, again, big Boss Baby vibes from everything for me. But I did just have to mention that, because I kind of gasped as he said it to her. I was like, dude, that's fucked up. You can't be saying that to people. And again, like this episode does a great job of showing you how scary Vader is, and showing you what he thinks Obi-Wan pushed him to. I don't know. I didn't want to say like Obi-Wan pushed him to, because like it wasn't really Obi-Wan that made him that. And we'll get to that later on. But it shows you where he's at in this 10 years later period now, and how evil he's already become. And you know, I guess I don't know necessarily when that comes in. I have the comics, and I'd love to get into them when I have more time, but I've been seeing some of the images pop up on Twitter, people being like, oh yeah, you like this version of Darth Vader, let me show you some stuff from Vader 1 or whatever, Vader Down, and here's stuff like that. So good stuff. And then we do have Obi-Wan praying to Qui-Gon, and Qui-Gon not showing up at all. And I'm wondering if this is like, I don't know actually, because in the future we'll see that they have the ability to kind of come whenever, whether or not like Luke, for example, has mastered the Force, Obi-Wan's able to talk to him. So it does feel like Qui-Gon probably could come talk to him if he wanted to here. It's not like Obi-Wan's not doing it right or anything, right? So it does feel, and I've seen some people point this out online, that it's kind of a dick move for him not to show up here and be like, all right, man, it is fucked up. Yeah, I know what you just found out. Like, you're probably feeling really bad right now. And just talk to him a little bit. I don't know what answers Qui-Gon actually would have, but I mean, that would be a good time to show up. But I know that they're probably just waiting for it because we've said that we're pretty sure that he's going to show up. But interesting that he doesn't show up here. And then we do have Leia comes in and is talking to Kenobi as he fixes her little bug thing, which I've forgotten the name of. It's something with an L, I believe.
Lola.
Okay. I knew what Luna is, what they, her fake name is later, right? Luna is Leia's fake name and Lola is the bug thing. Got it. And they have a little heartfelt moment here, and it's here where I'm starting to feel like, all right, their relationship definitely is something that I'm invested in and can see going. And then later on, it gets even better, I think. But that's where we start with Obi-Wan and Leia, and we talked about Darth Vader on Mustafar as well. So,
well, you just kind of get right back to that. Like, here's Obi-Wan, you know, he's to some degree aware that Darth Vader is alive, Anakin Skywalker is alive. He's trying to find his old master. And then 2 seconds later, she's like, how can you not make this go faster with the Force? And just like a little bit, like, cuts us back to the casual plot, like he's trying to get this annoying kid home, which is like a really funny thing, you know, like they're like, oh, he's like, oh yeah, you're right, I gotta go like wander off in the desert, you know, with this 10-year-old girl who won't listen to anything I say or take it serious, but you know, won't be discreet with me, you know. He's like, oh, like, you don't talk. And she's like, I don't talk or I won't talk. He's like, you don't talk, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've like I said in the last episode, I loved their dynamic. I love it even more in this one, especially like after that scene where they decide to leave. They're like, oh, nobody's coming to get us, let's get some help. They meet up with Mole Man Zach Braff, Freck, he's the man. And there's that scene when the stormtroopers get on the transport, right, where he accidentally calls her Leia, and then he looks at her, he goes like, you know, I look in her face and I just see her mother. And bro, that shit hit. That was a great moment.
I thought it was going to be my best fact that was Zach Braff doing like his best like Owen Wilson / alien impression.
/ Seth Rogen.
Oh, see, no, Seth Rogen. Yeah, that was my conspiracy yeah. theory that I looked up, where it sounds like he's doing a Seth Rogen
yeah.
impression. Because I was convinced it was Seth Rogen. Zach Braff pops up at the end, and I was like, okay, so the only other person that he could have been was Freck. So then I was like convincing myself. I was like, all right, so here's what happened. Zach Braff was in the prosthetics, and they got Seth Rogen to do the voice. And I'm like, no, obviously it's not what happened. But it sounds, listen to it again if you're a listener who hasn't noticed that yet. It literally, to me at least, sounds exactly like Seth Rogen. He even like laughs at one point, and I think it sounds like Seth Rogen's laugh even. So conspiracy theory that it's actually not Zach Braff. They credited the wrong guy in Hollywood. They don't even look like, I don't know how they would have gotten that confused, but I don't know. He literally has to have been trying to sound like Seth Rogen, I feel like, because that's not what Zach Braff even sounds like.
I think so.
You know, I've heard Zach Braff talk before. He has a goddamn podcast. And obviously he's in Scrubs and everything else, but he specifically does an audio format thing where he doesn't sound like Seth Rogen all the time. So it's noticeable. I don't know. I had to Google it and was very happy to find out that I wasn't like going crazy and that there was like a conspiracy theory that Zach Braff was actually Seth Rogen in this episode. But yeah, that was what I texted you guys about earlier before we got on air, folks, that I had a little conspiracy theory that I was backed up online by.
I was going to say, we've heard your conspiracy theory now, Duncan. Jeff, what was your conspiracy theory?
So we'll hold off on that for now.
Sick.
Okay.
Tease.
Well, so I've seen like, so it's Reva, right? Or is it Reva?
I think it's Reva, but I could be saying it wrong.
So people obviously think, I saw Mace Windu's daughter, which I don't think is true. And then I don't think that one really makes any sense. And then people are saying like, oh, it's actually going to be like Darth Revan, which I think that unless they just totally like change the actual storyline, like I don't think that really would make sense, even though like, because Revan is a video game character. I mean, I'm sure he was in books too. He or she could look like any.
From like 2000 years before.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I think there's other places they've drawn the line, but no, that was the one I saw, but I also didn't think it was true. But I did see the thing about Zach Braff. Some people were saying, oh, he actually just voiced the clone trooper that fell off the tower, because that kind of sounds like him too. But no, I was a lifelong Scrubs fan. I think that definitely sounds like some of the goofy voices Zach Braff has done over the years.
Yeah, plus they could have just like modulated it, like thrown some effects on it.
But don't you think that at some point they were aware that this sounds like Seth Rogen?
Had to be.
And like, that's fine if it's like a little in joke. I just want acknowledgement that we're not crazy. And if it is an in joke for them, they'll never acknowledge it if they're smart. Like that would be the best way to commit to the bit, would just be like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Seth Rogen was never on set. We weren't even trying to go for it, this, that, and the other. But I mean, I think they had to have been aware of what was going down. But I think you're probably right, Forbes, that it's him doing a voice. But I think he was trying to do that, which is so weird. Like, right? If I was given the chance to be in Star Wars and I was given the chance to be a voice actor only, I would be damn sure it sounded like me and me only, right? But I guess he has the opportunity to always be somewhere else now, because there'll be no like, well, he looks like him or sounds like him. He doesn't look or sound like anyone in the Star Wars universe yet, Zach Braff. So he's smart in that aspect. A little bit of a tangent there on that character. We jumped a little bit ahead because I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk about Obi-Wan in general and where he's at right now, because I'm not going to call him Ben. Sorry, guys. I know that he wants us to call him Ben, and by the time we meet him in episode 4, he is Ben, but he's Obi-Wan. And I wanted to talk about what Leia, I think, is doing for him, because he's a hermit. We know that, and that's expected. And we do see him watching after Luke, and we see him, maybe to Uncle Owen's chagrin, watching after Luke, and we see him trying to give him toys, which actually ends up being the toy that he's playing with later on when we see him in A New Hope. That's the fighter pilot plane that he's playing with, is the one that Obi-Wan's trying to assemble. So that's cool. But he's depressed. He's traumatized by what happened between him and his good friend, and his someone who he was really a caretaker to as well. And a big brother is what I would call it, because it's not really a father-son thing. It is like a big brother relationship. And he's not in a good spot. And I think that he's also in a spot that's very similar to maybe how Luke feels in both episode 7 and 8, but when we see him in 8, really, but he's doing the same thing in episode 7, we just don't see him. But that feeling of, I've fucked up, I've led someone that I love to the dark side, and a lot of other complicated feelings that go along with that, but that feeling of, I should isolate myself and there's nothing, no good I can do, right? And I think Leia is kind of showing him that this next generation is something to be really invested in. And obviously he already wants to like train Luke when he comes of age and stuff like that, but that seems more of like a almost like wartime decision, I guess, is the best way I can think of to describe it. And this is like the love is coming out again, and he's remembering his love, not only for like obviously Padme, because he's been referencing that. I know it's driving you crazy, Gardner. You love it, and we all do, but his love for Anakin too, and his love for therefore Anakin's kin. And like obviously he's not going to not save kids in general, right? Like if Leia wasn't Anakin's daughter, I think he would have gone on the mission to save her anyway, right? But the point is that I think that like that love for the Skywalker family, really, because of his love for Anakin and his love for Padme too. I mean, they were all close. It wasn't just him and Anakin, and it wasn't just Anakin and Padme. So I think that's really, she's helping that come out and probably helping us get to a point where obviously they can write it however they want. But I think that based on where Obi-Wan was, like maybe we don't get to the point where we are in A New Hope without like this little excursion, for example. Like maybe this is really crucial in Obi-Wan's journey to becoming the mentor that he becomes, is what I'm positing.
I think that is all very spot on. I was very skeptical going into this show. Is this going to be a story worth telling? Is this going to be a necessary story? And I think, at least so far, they've proved that, yeah, it is. This is really crucial character development. And it adds so much depth to Leia's relationship with Obi-Wan as well. Like in A New Hope, when Luke rescues her and he's like, I'm here with Ben Kenobi. And she jumps up. She's like, Ben Kenobi, where? Like that just adds an extra layer to it. And the fact that she names her son Ben, you know, it just recontextualizes things in a way that I think enriches them rather than detracting from them, which is something that is a fine line to walk when you're doing prequels. And yeah, Duncan, I think that's a great point about how she's helping Obi-Wan. Like you said, he's depressed, and especially at the beginning of this episode, and probably even more so at the end of this episode, after finding out that Anakin is still alive and who Anakin is now. And you know, he's a little snippy with Leia at the beginning. He's like, not everyone is good, Leia, you know, like kind of snaps at her, and she just like keeps chipping away at him and like reinstilling that hope into his heart when he's ready to just give up. I see a lot of Luke and Rey parallels in episode 8, where Luke has resigned himself, not necessarily given up, but given up, thinking that the galaxy is better off without him, and he needs someone from the new generation to kind of remind him how important he is. For Luke, it's to be a symbol to the galaxy. For Obi-Wan, it's to be a direct mentor to these twins. I think that's very important. And yeah, I think you put it perfectly.
And real quick before you go, Jeff, I did want to say that if Star Wars is about hope, right? And to a certain degree, that is what it's about. I mean, it's about family and stuff like that as well. It's about a lot of things. But if Star Wars is about hope, and that's what the first movie has been back-titled, right? A New Hope. Then Leia is that character of hope, right? It's not Han Solo for sure. And it's certainly not Luke when, you know what I mean? He's the character who ends up a hermit, where she ends up the general still fighting for the resistance. So she's the character who says the hope lines. She's the character who I think represents the hope. So, and Star Wars is a lot about hope as well. So I think it's very cool that she's providing Obi-Wan, hopefully, with that hope right now. I think that's where it's going and where it's already gone to a certain degree.
Gardner covered it better than I could. He was so up and down. You know, he was snippy at points. He's depressed. He's just, you can see the happiness in his heart. And then he goes back to like, no one's coming, Leia. Like, and then just stuff like that. Just really good. Like, I'm not going to say a roller coaster of emotions. You can fill in your own word for that.
But so we do see that he's being pessimistic here and he's not got that hope and he's not believing in the good and he expects it to be someone lying to him. And like we find out that, and it's kind of obvious like that she's probably right because that's like what the story feels like it's telling you, right? When they walk away, it's like they were probably were coming. You can see that it's not being like Obi-Wan's right here for wanting to walk away. It's more like Obi-Wan's being a sourpuss and he should think about it a little bit more and like not just be so pessimistic. And who knows, like maybe in a different world, like they would have gotten killed if they had stayed, so maybe it was the right choice to walk away. So I don't know, it's hard to decide whether someone's being a curmudgeon or like they shouldn't be listening to the 10-year-old because the 10-year-old's 10, right? You know, so it's, who knows, like we as the viewer, again, it's like the thing, we know that like Leia was right because we find out that Leia was right and they should have stayed there, but she's again 10 and he's a Jedi, who knows what he's talking about. So his pessimism is kicking into play here and they're showing it to us for a reason and they're putting it on display. And then here is where we meet Freck, who I do like this part. It's very, again, Leia, it's like, you don't speak, and she's like, no, I'm gonna be the one who starts this conversation, actually, right? And she still does say the things that he tells her to say. She's not just gonna be like the fuck up, because a lot of times when you're watching something, like someone will be like told to not say anything, and they're told to not say anything for a reason because they're gonna fuck it up if they do. And that's not necessarily the case here, that he doesn't trust her because she's 10, because again, she's a 10-year-old, so you probably don't go around trusting 10-year-olds to like carry a lie or anything, for example. But she takes control of that and is able to still follow like what he's saying, listen to it, do the right thing, and get them on there. And he's kind of right to be skeptical about it, but that's where her, like, again, optimism kind of, maybe she's taking a step too far, like wanting to get on the truck with him. But it's also like sketchy to be like, I don't want to get on, like, why don't you want to get on the truck with me? Now I'm sketched out. Now I'm going to tell the stormtroopers, which obviously this leads them into sketchy situations. But we've already touched on a little bit of it. They get in the back of the car. They give the names Lola and, ooh, I'm forgetting the O name that they give.
I think it's like Ordin or something. It's Ordin, a weird name.
Yeah.
I guess Luma and Ordin, I think.
Oh, it's Luma. I think I was saying Luna. So, okay. So Luma and Ordin. And then obviously we get some stormtroopers on with them and he's like friendly with them. He loves the Empire, which is a funny little character aspect. And I love when she's like, oh, we love the Empire too, or whatever. That was a great line read from Little Leia. So that was one that I kind of was referencing earlier when I said there was a specific thing that I was thinking of. That was one of the moments where I was like, all right, I'm sold on this character for sure. And I don't think she's a bad actor at all. I think she's definitely holding her weight I think she's only 7 years old playing a 10-year-old also. That's what I read online. I could be wrong on that, but I don't know why you'd age down with the actor. That's an interesting choice, but I think she's definitely holding her own. And it's a scene that stuck out to me as definitely a positive when she said that. I thought it was a good line read. And then it's, you know, they build good tension here with the saying the wrong name and then playing it off like that in a really heartfelt way, actually, too. But my one thing I'm watching, I'm like, they didn't tell these stormtroopers the names of the people they're looking for. Like, so they obviously don't know they're looking for a Leia and a Obi-Wan, or a Leia and anyone, because if they heard the name Leia, then they would be like, okay, well, fuck, let's look at this, right? And again, my whole thing with this is, again, like, he's dressed like a Jedi, dude. Like, he looks like a Jedi, which I know, like, he's just dressed like a guy on Tatooine, really, but they've retconned it, so that's what all the Jedi actually did wear. We've seen it in the prequels, so it's just very interesting to me. As a viewer, like, I know he's a Jedi, he looks like a Jedi to me, I know he's Obi-Wan, like, don't they have pictures of Obi-Wan? Like, wouldn't he be blasted everywhere? Like, shouldn't, like, if I was Darth Vader, I'd make sure every stormtrooper knew what Obi-Wan looked like, for example, and I'd have, like those, like, little, here's what he looked like with a beard, here's what he looked like if he had a mohawk, here's what he looked like if he dyed his hair blonde. Like, I'd have all those different, like, things up, and I'd, like, because he's got hatred for him, and we see it, he wants to torture it, and we will get to that, but I don't know, yeah. That was a little interesting that they couldn't just, like, I felt like they should have been fucked right there, like, they should have figured that out, but obviously they don't. They get off, and then they go to the border, and that's where, like, this guy Freck was snitching on them, basically. He's like, check these guys out. It goes wrong, they scan them. He doesn't use the Force in time. It does scan them, and it lets them know, the third sister, Reva, and the Inquisitors know that he's been scanned and where to look for him. And this is where he, like, then fights them, shoots them, saves Leia, and then ends up confronted by the stormtroopers who are with I don't know the name of this character, but the one who turns on the Empire and saves them by shooting the three.
Tala.
So Tala shoots the three stormtroopers she's with, saving Obi-Wan and Leia. I did think, again, I'm just going to nitpick real quick before I let you guys talk. Not really a big complaint, but like, he's like acting like, oh, I'm fucked now because I've got these three stormtroopers and their boss in front of me. It's like, dude, okay, they know who you are. So there's no excuse to not like be using lightsaber and force here now. You should not be surrendering. You've just been scanned. They know who you are. He was acting like he was like down in the dumps had he not been saved. And I was like, okay, like he would just be fine. Like just kill them because they know who you are. But that was just my one thought process there, that he didn't really need her to save him, but she does. And then we'll talk about where we get to after that. But your guys' turn to talk about this little desert escapade and the tall farmers that are Ordin and Luma.
I think when I was watching it with Claire, and we kept saying like he couldn't look any more like Obi-Wan Kenobi if he was trying. And you have to realize it's like they want him to look like Obi-Wan Kenobi because that's what will make a good show that Star Wars fans will love. And so you just have to put it aside. But it's like, come on, like you look identical to Obi-Wan Kenobi in every way. And then when the stormtroopers are 5 feet away, you kind of meekly put up your hood. It's like, this is the exact opposite of being disguised. But you just kind of have to say like, yeah, like we want him to look like Obi-Wan in the show. And that's a very fair point. No, but yeah, I love that scene. Of course, it was Freck that actually figured it out. It was really like menacing with the stormtroopers, like kind of the like direct face to face and like the very like switching between the camera shots of like who they're looking at. And you kind of know something's about to go on. And then those guys get off and you're like, oh, maybe there's going to be some peace. And then no, they get turned in. And then the droid coming in, like the exact scout droid that they've always kind of used in Star Wars from the Empire. You know, those things are cool. And you're like, come on, blow it up. Like, it's going to get you. It's going to get you. And then, of course, it gets him. But yeah, no, loved that scene.
Yeah, I think he was just waiting for the stormtroopers to kind of let their guard down a little bit before he started blasting. But a lot of people were like, why did he let himself get identified? It's like, come on, there's no story if he just like perfectly saves Leia and gets away. Like, where's the conflict? Yeah. Are we just glossing over the fucking stormtrooper that got bisected by falling through the fence? Oh my God.
Yeah, I thought that was definitely a Phantom Menace reference.
Oh yeah, no, I see that now. Yeah, that was just like, that set the tone for the rest of the episode. I was like, oh, we're going here. Like, this is what this episode is going to be like. All right, bet. And it did not disappoint after that.
Yeah, I know you guys have kind of loosely used the phrase that it's for kids, but definitely a lot in this episode, there's a little gruesome and not necessarily for kids. Like, that was an awesome shot. It was like, whoa. And then obviously later on, you know, a lot of stuff going on. It's not exactly PG.
They're pushing that TV 14.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was going to try and figure out what it was because it definitely has some of that like very dark.
I think you guys are crazy. The Phantom Menace is more gory than that. Count Dooku gets his head chopped off in the prequel trilogy.
In episode 3. Yeah.
I know. I'm talking about the whole trilogy though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I was specifically first referencing the Phantom Menace and specifically the climax of the Phantom Menace with both Qui-Gon's death and then Darth Maul's. But you know, I feel like that's just as brutal as this. And it's a character that has a name as well. So it's even more brutal in my opinion.
True, true. And you know, it's Star Wars violence. So everything's like immediately cauterized. There's no blood. It's just kind of like, whoa, you know, as far as like the Disney Plus shows. Well, that's not true. There was
we're gonna go into Daredevil.
Well, no, I was gonna say like for the Star Wars Disney Plus shows, there hasn't necessarily been that level of violence. But then I was gonna immediately walk that back because in the Mandalorian episode of Book of the Boba Fett, he just straight up cuts a dude in half and then cuts his head off. So I guess I'm wrong.
I mean, I think kids should be able to watch whatever. I grew up watching all these when I was like way young.
Yeah.
I also watched other horror movies, whether or not that negatively impacted me. But no, I just, you want them to push that line. You want them to create things on par with the end of Revenge of Sith or things that are, you know, like that cartoony Star Wars violence. So there's absolutely no complaints there, but I was just like, huh, what is this rated again? Like, is Disney making this for, you know, their 8-year-old kids to then sell the droid toys to? So
she does save them and brings them to the port that they've been looking for, but not directly there because they have to wait a few hours. The pilot isn't ready to go yet, so they have to stay hidden for a couple hours. She has them in a little shop with a droid who can't speak, and we have some nice conversation here too, I'd say. Like, I really liked the line where she said that she can't imagine Obi-Wan doing anything wrong. And like, obviously here's the line that I think I've referenced a couple times now where he corrects her and it's like, it's just Ben now. But I really like what she's saying there where it's like, yeah, he should be this person that people know about. We know from watching the movies how big a part he played in ultimately a really tragic thing. But we know that before that he was doing good. And we know that the entire time he was trying to do good. And none of it was necessarily his specific fault, actually. You know what I mean? I mean, I've blamed the Jedi for a lot of things in the past, but I don't know if I would specifically put most of it, or I mean, a very small amount of it on Obi-Wan for sure. He treats Anakin a little babyish at certain points and doesn't really acknowledge how much he's helpful and how much of an asset Anakin is and how many times he really has saved his life, or at least we hear about that. We don't necessarily see that in the movies as much, but we do hear about it. But he's not really the one who caused all this to go wrong, and I like that he's getting that shine there where it's like, this person's like, wow, like, she's kind of like fanboying a little bit.
Yeah, and you can tell maybe she's wondering, like, what are we fighting for then? Like, I'm taking this huge risk. I know the Empire's not, it's not what I thought it is. You know, I joined it before I realized what it was too late. And she's like, got this hero figure in her mind of Obi-Wan who can do no wrong. And he's like, already said, like, well, we all made mistakes earlier. I don't think it was to her, but then he's like kind of changing his identity, backing away from who he was.
Yeah, like you said, like, everyone should know who he is. He was a very prominent general in the Clone Wars for the Republic. Like, he was basically like one of the more well-known war heroes. Like, people would have known who he is. And actually, I think he does say that line to her, because she's talking about, like, the Empire isn't what I thought it was. And he just goes, like, we all made mistakes. I just think that, yeah, like you said, Duncan, like, good scene, good conversation, good character moments. This episode, I think, is the best balance so far of action and character study that we've gotten so far in the show. And I think there's a lot of, like, particularly with Obi-Wan, there's a lot of good character study stuff in the first two episodes. The action is not really there. And then there's, like, some middling parts with, like, the Inquisitors and stuff like that. But even with the Inquisitors, I thought the character stuff was better in this episode. I like how they are really leaning into the sibling rivalry among the brothers and sisters, and how the fifth brother and the third sister are constantly trying to get over on one another and get in Vader's good graces while the Grand Inquisitor is incapacitated. Because they stopped short of saying that he's dead, you know, and we know he's in Rebels, so we know he's not dead. I just wish that that particular element had been introduced earlier in the series, that they had done a little more to establish that, because even knowing the Inquisitors from playing Fallen Order and watching Rebels, I was still a little bit like, what really is going on with them? I'm not completely sure I understand them, and I don't fully connect. And like we talked about, like, Reva's character, like, I think she's supposed to be that kind of angsty, not that good at her, kind of bratty, not that intimidating. You know, I think that's a feature, not a bug, of her character. I think that's intentional. I wish we'd gotten more of that development earlier. But what we got in this episode between Reva and the fifth brother, we skipped over this earlier when we were talking about, like, the probe and stuff like that. They send those out, and there's the whole, like, oh, you talked to Vader by yourself? And then, like, oh, he's already been informed. You know, I like that, the way they're kind of gaming back and forth with each other. I think that does a lot to give depth to their characters instead of them just being bad guys in black robes.
Yeah, I just ended up on, like, a rabbit hole while you were saying that. I was listening, but I ended up on, like, Quinlan Voss's page.
Oh, yeah, they do name drop Quinlan Voss.
Yeah, and I read something about Ventress that I did not know, that I was a lot happy to find out.
Careful of those Wikipedia rabbit holes. They'll get you, dude. Especially when you start going back before, like, between canon and legends, seeing, like, what they brought over, what they changed. Dude, I've gotten trapped in those rabbit holes before.
I thought episode 3 did a much better job, like you're saying, Gardner, of showing the relationship between the Inquisitors. It's like, kind of like Duncan was saying, like, you have the Darth Vader threatening to kill her if she doesn't do it. It's like, oh yeah, that's what the Sith and the Empire are like, you know? It's like, this isn't quite like the law of two, but it's the law of Vader and this, like, brotherhood of people that all clearly have no love for each other. They all just want to be the one next to Vader at the end of the day. And so there's no, like, the fifth brother guy's kind of been annoyingly wrong at every turn, and, like, annoyingly, like, a suck up to Vader. So I don't love him. Kind of hoping he'll go the way of the dodo when it's all said and done. But I've loved the dynamic of them and, like, giving a character to these people that, you know, maybe have been in some offshoot things, but for the most part have not been a big part of the, like, movies and shows made so far.
Well, I hate to spoil that for you, Jeff, but he is also in Rebels, so he makes it through. The one that we don't know the new Inquisitors are Reva. We don't know where her story goes. And we were talking earlier about people think that Mace Windu's daughter, no way, the Jedi don't have kids except for Anakin. I think it's pretty obvious that she is one of those Padawans from the beginning that now has a grudge against the Jedi Order because she feels abandoned. And Kenobi's like the last big Jedi. So, I mean, there may even be a personal thing she has with Kenobi, which is why she's going after him. And her, and then the woman with, like, the tentacles coming out of her head or whatever, never seen her before. So I don't know what her fate is going to be.
Yeah, my prediction was that Reva was going to go good at the end. But I also have gone back and forth on that, like, 3 times.
Yeah, I'm seeing that people are saying that a la Kylo and Darth Vader later, but earlier than Kylo. She'll do the same thing, and they're predicting that she'll go out because we don't see her later on. I didn't know about the fifth brother surviving, but I'm also seeing that since the Grand Inquisitor is just a title, doesn't that mean this guy could actually be dead? And another guy who's just the same...
Maybe. They're the same species.
Race, or species, they're saying that race. Because I was seeing people headcanon, and they're like, that's why he looks fucked up. Different guy. He's got a fat face. He's dead now. They're bringing skin face in, and I think they're crazy, but I was just saying that apparently it's on the table. And although Jedi don't have kids, like you said, Gardner, they can fuck, just so we're clear. George Lucas has gone on the record, they're allowed to fuck.
True, good point.
They just can't make love, no attachment.
How about the scene where Obi-Wan can feel Darth Vader's presence there, and they're about to go through the tunnel, and he just starts losing it and like can barely stand up, like he's freaking out, everyone's like, come on, we gotta go, and he's just absolutely terrified.
Great stuff.
I thought it was great. I mean, like, all this PTSD Obi-Wan that we're getting is just perfect. That's exactly, like I've said, like, this is the Obi-Wan. Like, I don't, if you were expecting to see Obi-Wan come out and like immediately start kicking ass, I don't know what prequel movies you watched, but that was not going to be the case 10 years later, especially if he has been in hiding, you know, mostly on Tatooine in the 19 years between 3 and 4. And I love I guess we can talk about this scene now. Once Vader feels Obi-Wan, he's like, I'm going to try to draw him out now. And he just starts mercilessly killing people. Like, I'm going to get him out. And that's like, I talked about this being like a horror movie with Vader. That is like the scene where like it really starts. Like, that shit is scary, bro.
Yeah, there was a second I was like, what's he, you know, he knows that's not Obi-Wan. I was like, oh, he knows exactly what he's doing. Like, he's like, I'm going to get this guy out here. And to some degree it worked, because, you know, I think if you, like, there was a good chance they probably should have kept going through that tunnel. I don't think he knew exactly where he was, but, you know, Obi-Wan, for either just because he thought it would give Leia a better chance to get away, or if he thought, you know, he could stop something, just decides to go basically cause a distraction and lead to this incredible, like almost like cat and mouse lightsaber battle.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. And that's exactly what he was trying to do. And it's so brutal. And I have this thing where watching it, I have anxiety about specifically the son who runs out to save his dad and then gets his neck snapped. And it's like, then it's not even for, because that kid's dead. His life's just over. He doesn't know, right? It's the mom coming out afterwards. He was like, your husband was dead. Like, that was happening. But now your son, because he couldn't control himself. And I'm not blaming the son, but because of his emotions, he ran out there and got his neck snapped. And now you're down too. And it's like very similar to when someone who loses someone then dies of grief. And it's like that family now just lost two family members, right? And it's obviously the person who died of grief really went through it because they were in so much pain that they actually died. So that's awful. And that's not what happened here. It's a little different. But I'm just using that as an example. And that sucks for them. But then you really think about their family as well. And it's like, that's two people down. And it's, you know, obviously a tragedy to begin with, but it's always like rough for me. It's very similar in movies where it's like someone will be like with his squad, like, and they'll be like being interrogated, and they'll be like, well, we're not telling you anything. And then they'll kill Jeff. And they're like, all right, fine, we'll tell you now. And it's like, you couldn't have told him a minute ago and Jeff would still be alive. It's like, you're down a whole guy. And I get it, because now you don't want Steve to also be killed, but were you just, that was a bad bluff to call, you know? So I get anxiety about that kind of stuff. And I could not stop thinking about the kid running out there. And I was like, dude, just stay the fuck inside. And it's only one family member dead now. Because obviously he doesn't know Darth Vader like we do, but he should. He lives in a goddamn, I mean, if I lived in a universe with him, I'd be reading up on all of the Darth Vader lore I could, you know? I want to know what not to say in front of him, you know?
Well, according to the lore, Darth Vader's supposed to be like a very like shadowy, like secret figure in this time period. Like even in A New Hope, I think, is it Moff Gideon? Or not Moff Gideon, Tarkin?
Yeah.
That he calls him the Emperor's pet. Like, he's kind of like in secrecy, like he's like a weapon that's only sent out every now and then, and the Inquisitors do most of the dirty work. I loved so like, and then you just see this guy in all black with this breathing apparatus show up, and he's like 7 feet tall, terrifying, and then just so brutal to have him just snap that kid's neck. First we see the guy get cut in half on the fence, then we see a child be murdered. I was like, bro, they are not shying away from how evil Darth Vader is in this show, and I love it, because I sat up and I was like, this is the Vader from the comics, you know, like Duncan, like you were saying, you saw on Twitter earlier, reading the comics, dude, that like Darth Vader in his prime, he is an absolute menace. Like, he is the most evil motherfucker you can imagine. And we didn't really get to see that in the OT so much. I mean, he's like, yeah, he like kidnaps Leia and he tortures Han and stuff like that. But you don't see him really go on a rampage. You see it a little bit for like 20 seconds in Rogue One, which is a cool scene. But to have a real more grounded way of showing it, and like you said, like showing that family just be ripped apart in like the blink of an eye really amps up the level of menace that Vader conveys.
When it's like you're saying, he's like the Emperor's pet, like the Empire is trying to set up a society. Like you have Zach Braff slash Seth Rogen say, oh, there's nothing wrong with a little order. Like this town probably doesn't love the Empire being there with their guns all the time, but now they're really not going to be Darth Vader fans after watching this. But until then, it's just this kind of shadowy figure no one really knows. And then he just comes through town, you know, just absolutely demolishes everyone. You see they're like just roughing everyone up afterwards.
And it reminds me of something that you always say, Gardner, and I don't know what exactly you're referencing. I mean that in the sense that I don't know who to give credit to, but I think it's scholarly. But you always say that whenever something or someone is in enough place of power, that anything against that system will be utilized for the system instead. And I don't know exactly if there's a guy behind that theory that I should be referencing. So if it's like...
There is, but I don't know the name. I read it in a communications class and I forgot, but I remembered the idea.
Okay. So if anyone does, listeners, you can yell at us about that one because we're not giving the credit where it's due there, but we apologize. Anyway, I'm thinking about that here where the Jedi or what's left of them are the good guys. And if you're Freck, for example, and you were to find out that this guy was actually Obi-Wan that everyone's looking for and he's a Jedi, you should feel like safe and you should want to help him and you should be like, okay, good, this guy's like fighting for good out there for whatever. But because of like the brainwashing slash terror, for example, if you are one of these town's members, not only are you going to be like, fuck Darth Vader, he snapped my son's neck and killed my husband, but you can also be like, fuck the Jedi, because he wouldn't have even been here if he wasn't looking for this Obi-Wan fella, right? So it creates, I mean, it does create a little bit of a hatred for Darth Vader, but he doesn't want to be loved, he wants to be feared. But it also hurts the Jedi in the sense that people aren't going to want to help them, people aren't going to trust them, people aren't going to want them to exist if where they go, they bring the Empire's wrath. So this is a brutal scene, and it's very on par, I think, with that ending scene of Rogue One in brutality and ruthlessness, and seeing Darth Vader actually be that most terrifying, best villain that, you know, he's always ranked as, if not number one, up there on all those lists. And we see that he's trying to draw Obi-Wan out. Obi-Wan leaves Leia and Tala to run to the rendezvous spot to meet up with the pilot, and he tries to coax Vader away to save these townspeople, because the Jedi cannot help themselves. They have to protect other people. Because really, like, if he wanted to stick to the mission, he could have just dipped out with Leia, right? And left these people to be fucked. And that's what a Sith would do. And that's very black and white, good versus bad. Like, you shouldn't leave a bunch of people to get massacred because someone's looking for you. But it's not, he doesn't take the cowardly route, at least. You know, he definitely is that hero, protagonist that you want to be watching. And he shows that he's worth rooting for, even if he is maybe not always the best guy, because we'll get into some of the decisions he did make in the past that lead us to where we are now, with Darth Vader is hunting him down, and Darth Vader finds him in the outskirts of the town, and he's trying to draw him out with his words. He's like, you know, Obi-Wan, come out here, you can't run from me. It's very much like, again, like a horror movie. It's like that you can run but you can't hide. I guess it's the opposite, because he's telling him he can't run or hide probably. But here's where we have the line that everyone's talking about, where Obi-Wan's asking him, what have you become? And he says, I am what you've made me. And we'll talk about the actual fight of it and where it ends up. It ends up with him trying to torture him in the same way that he was tortured on Mustafar with the lava in the first place. But it's interesting because he has somewhat of a point, and he also says, you should have killed me when you had the chance, right? Which is that, you know, I wonder how many movies and TV shows that's been used in, but whatever, not a big deal. He says that, and he's also right with that, because it's like, you could have avoided a lot of this, not only the pain for the galaxy, yourself, other people, but Anakin himself. This life isn't a life worth living, where it's hatred and he's literally become an evil genocide person. So you could have done that by killing him instead of leaving him to supposedly die by being burnt to death. Not a merciful thing. And I believe in like the novelization, it's like said that he wasn't feeling merciful that day and like basically left him to act like he knew what he was doing, basically. Like, which, like, I mean, I don't know how he wouldn't know what he was doing. But this is where it's like, I get where Darth Vader's coming from in that point, where Obi-Wan was kind of pulling a real fucked up move at the end of episode 3 in how he leaves Anakin. And obviously he has to do that because for the story, we have to get Darth Vader. But it's interesting. Is that maybe a little bit out of character, like that leaving him there? And I understand it's like a very stressful moment that he's in, and like, he's just found out out that he killed the younglings and stuff like that. But is there ever a moment that, like, leaving someone to be tortured to death, basically, by being burnt alive instead of, if you're gonna do, like, a execution, shouldn't you at least not make it painful? I don't know. If you're Obi-Wan, if you're a Jedi, because he's saying all these things now, I bring it up. So I'm curious as to what you guys think about Obi-Wan and his involvement in Darth Vader becoming Darth Vader specifically.
I kind of take the perspective of, it's like, Obi-Wan warned you, dude. He had the high ground and you tried it anyway. And you chose the dark side. I can understand where you're coming from, where it's not very Jedi-like to just leave somebody to get burned alive by fucking lava. I wouldn't necessarily say, like, out of character, but it's a questionable decision for sure. And I think I think that informs where Obi-Wan is now. You know, he's not a perfect guy. He's got a lot of regrets. We have that nightmare he has in the first episode where he keeps flashing back between, like, young Anakin and then Anakin being burned, you know, screaming, "I hate you." And he keeps going back and forth and back and forth between those things. And you know he wishes he could have done something different. And I bet when Vader said that, "I am what you made me," I mean, he just turns and runs after that, which I think is kind of a funny shot, the way he just, like, dips. Goodbye there. I think he felt that. I think that really got to Obi-Wan. And I think we'll kind of see, I'm looking forward to all the future episodes, but I'll be very interested to see how he processes this encounter afterwards. And fuck, dude, a lot of people are speculating we might get some flashbacks next episode. If they put Obi-Wan in the Bacta tank, if Book of Boba Fett taught us anything, that's the flashbacta machine. So we might get some more heart-wrenching shit. Fuck, dude, we didn't even mention the shot where they're walking through the open field and he sees Anakin for just, like, a split second. Bro, I got chills. Like, the fact that he probably sees that all the time, dude. He's just haunted. Oh my God, dude. Oh, fuck. So much stuff to talk
about. Yeah, this could have been like a 3-hour podcast. There was just so much there. I mean, I had wanted to bring that up. I had it on my list. And then, you know, as we're trying to advance the plot forward, just one thing. But yeah, that was an awesome shot. It was like, that's not real. That's definitely just Obi-Wan. But, you know, he's just having so much regret. And it gets back to, like, the "I've made mistakes" quote. Like, he agrees he shouldn't have left Anakin there to become Darth Vader, but also the whole plot of the prequels is that the Jedi aren't perfect, and maybe they thought of themselves as too perfect and the Sith as too evil. You know, they thought, you know, they had this perfect system that would never allow anything like this. So, you know, we can just do this and we'll just make another super strong Jedi master with Anakin, and, you know, clearly see how that went out. In terms of that fight scene, I think the first time I watched it, I was just like, man, this is kind of a ho-hum lightsaber battle. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, oh no, Darth Vader is just kicking his ass. Like, Darth Vader is just, Obi-Wan has no chance here. He's just, like, absolutely smashing him down. You know, he's just showing him, like, you have no hope here. Like, and then Obi-Wan just keeps scurrying away. And then finally just, like, force chokes him. Just awesome stuff. Like, as I was saying earlier, just playing with his food. Just he has so much hate over everything that's going on. There's been no remorse. You know, obviously we know what happens at the end of episode 6, but we are not at that form of Darth Vader. We are very much at the very evil character who just, he wants to make Obi-Wan suffer in this scene.
It's making me even more unconvinced that Luke would ever have a shot against Darth Vader. Goddamn Gary Stu. Is that what they call it? The boy version?
Yes.
I mean, if you're going to call Rey that Mary Sue, you gotta say the same about Luke for sure.
Let's be even-handed here.
Yeah. Not that I have a problem with that in either way. It's, like we've said, fantasy films for kids that are fun and have lightsabers in it. No one else has lightsabers. Those are sick. So we did, yeah, obviously jump over that. But if, you know, feel free to jump back at any point because we like to hop around here. So don't feel tied to the plot at all. But we have gotten to this, like we said, final lightsaber battle. And it is. He's just kicking his ass. And it isn't like the fun twirling lightsabers of the prequel trilogy, because again, like, he's lost mobility as Darth Vader, so he's not doing that anymore. And this is where you're seeing that fight style that's more in line with the original trilogy. And also, it's like you see the weight behind his swings and you see the power that he has, and a lot of that I think is probably the suit as well as just where he is with his force knowledge learning. I guess he's probably, like, getting to his peak. I feel like, I don't know when he has to retire, but he's certainly not, he's got a couple rings left in it, is all I'm saying. But he'll be good for a while right now. And he's also not facing someone who, Obi-Wan's out of his prime, but he's also not in the mental state, which we've talked about at length. So his primary objective is save people in general, but specifically Leia, but then also this town. And it's not really to preserve himself. And obviously he wants to be able to look after Luke and Leia as well, but specifically Luke in the future. And we see that he does, but we also see that when that happens and when we pick up with the original trilogy, he's also willing to sacrifice sacrifice himself. So at the same point here, like, I think we know as an audience that he's willing to give his life in this fight for sure. And he's also not going into it expecting, I don't think, to beat Vader. And that's probably part of why he's playing that cat and mouse. It's a perfect way to describe it, Jeff. Game with Darth Vader.
The years have made you weak.
I mean, he straight up says, he's like, I want you to, it's like, now it's your turn to suffer.
Mm.
You know, he puts him in the fire and then he just tosses him out of it. He's like, bring him to me. Like, we're going to keep fucking this guy up. A lot of people are like, oh, Vader could have just walked through the fire and got him and like killed him right there. You know, it's like, he wasn't going to do that. He enjoys the hunt. He enjoys the torture. And I think that made perfect sense. And it just, I've said it like a million times this episode, but he's just so scary in this and so intimidating. I mean, Obi-Wan, like you said, is just completely unprepared for what comes his way. And they said, we got to get him to Jabim, right? So maybe in the next episode, if he's in Bacta or something like that, we might even see him, like, if Quinlan Vos shows up, maybe he starts training to get ready for his next encounter with Vader. So the next fight is not nearly so one-sided. Because Vader was kicking his ass with one hand, dude. And then this whole time we've got Leia running through the tunnel, right? And Tala, for some reason, Tala fucking leaves her. It's like, you promised Obi-Wan that you would make sure she's safe, like, go with her. But, you know, she had to save Obi-Wan, so that's fine.
Plus, what was she gonna do?
Yeah.
She would just be dead if she had showed up with Leia.
True.
I mean, not that she knows that, but Reva would have just killed her.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we'll get to, I don't want to jump that far ahead yet. I think we still have some gas left in the tank. And then we'll get to where we do leave off, because it's another one of those endings that leave you wanting more for sure. And leave you wanting to know what happens next, definitely. But yeah, I think that overall, this fight was basically all you could ask for in, I guess, at least a first fight in this series, and super badass, and exactly what I was referring to when I was saying, if this didn't do it for you in some aspect, then this show wasn't going to be for you, and that's fine, again, but you're looking for maybe not Star Wars, or maybe just a different part of Star Wars, because this is, if you're a Kenobi fan, if you're a this time period fan, if you're a prequel trilogy fan, exactly what you want. This is fun, and we all watched it a bunch of times. I put it on twice and then a third time on mute so I could just see it again. And I don't know. It's got to be what you want, I think, if you're looking for prequel content, prequel sequels, like you said, Gardner.
Yeah, save for the people that are just so done with the Skywalker family that they just want a whole completely separate Star Wars trilogy or something. I think if you don't like this last fight scene, it maybe just Star Wars isn't your show. Like, I don't know. It's just so Star Wars.
I mean, the movies haven't gone anywhere. You can always just go watch the movies if that's your thing. If you're not vibing with the new stuff, cool. You don't have to. You don't have to make it everybody else's fucking problem.
So the ending of the episode is obviously Obi-Wan is saved by Tala and the droid as well. And Reva sniffs out the whole situation with the droid leaving. She's got a little smirk on her face. She's like, I'm going to check this out. And I'm not going to tell anyone else about it because I'm going to get credit for it for sure. Smart move on her part. And we see her go through the tunnels. And again, she finds like some tracings on the wall. She figures out that this is some Rebel Alliance nonsense going on here. And she apprehends Leia at the end of the tunnel. And she has murdered the pilot. And Leia tries to run away, but we see her lunge towards Leia, and that's where the episode ends. Directed by Deborah Chow.
I'm glad they saved us another chase scene.
Yeah. I'm assuming that we'll have her in shackles to some degree when we start part four, but we'll see. There's a chance they just start us out with a chase scene. You never know.
I think the symbol that you were referring to, Duncan, I think that was the symbol of the Jedi Order, which is why Reva has such a visceral reaction to it. She, like, that's when she starts like throwing shit around, right? She's like, we haven't fully explained this yet. I bet we'll get some, I mean, we better get some fucking explanation before episode six. I feel like, of what exactly her backstory is and why she has such a grudge against the Jedi Order. But it's clear that she has some personal connection that makes her hate it so much.
So that is the end of part three. Like I said, we end with Leia getting trapped, though, and we have part four to look forward to next week. Another cliffhanger. I loved where we went with this episode. Is there anything from earlier on, or any predictions for later on, or anything that happened episodes 1, 2, or 3 that you guys want to bring up before we do get into our final thoughts and our ratings?
Quick shout out to the man, the myth, the fucking legend, James Earl Jones, back as the voice of Darth Vader. At least I think so. That might be like one of those AI voice deepfake things that they like mixed with his voice, but sounded amazing. I had no idea. I was like, is Hayden going to do the voice? Like, how are they going to do this? Nah, it was James Earl Jones, baby. And loved it.
if that's an AI, I'm worried about how easily I'm going to be fooled in the coming future because it sounds just like him. So,
right?
Yeah, there was some speculation online that they're doing the AI stuff because he is 91 and he's been in stuff more recently that people say he didn't sound as good in. He had a more aging voice in. But I don't know. I'm not commenting whether I think it is or isn't. They credited him, so that's all I know. And legendary performance in every aspect anytime he's Darth Vader. So, absolutely amazing. So, that does wrap up our discussion of part 3 of Kenobi, the new Star Wars show on Disney Plus. That does bring us to our final thoughts and our ratings of the episode. Jeff, as our guest, you get to go first. You get to tell us what you really thought of Kenobi Part 3 and give us a rating out of 10 of the episode.
So when I came on here last, I did the penultimate Boba Fett and I went with an 8.2, trying to sound sophisticated and holding as if it always could be better. And I pretty much regretted it from the moment I said it. So I'm going to go with 9.1 crystals that a lightsaber can set on fire. I don't know if we have a technical term for those things, but those were awesome. I thought that this was just everything I was looking for in a Star Wars film. You know, of course, small things here and there, you know, lines not said perfect, but it was just such a good episode, such a good plot, such a story that, you know, maybe we could have gone the rest of our lives and never really needed this story, but it does add value to the characters that we're going to see in the original trilogy, to things that happen in the prequels. And it's just really good television and really awesome. So I loved every minute of it. And now I could not be more excited for the next episode. I was just chomping at, I'm going to go watch it for a third time after we stop recording. So.
Hell yeah. Love to see that rating here. Gardner, that means you're up next. What are your final thoughts and what is your rating of Kenobi Part 3?
Yeah, I mean, this is the strongest episode of the series so far. It had so much to love about it. Hardly any detracting factors that I can think of. Built on the Inquisitors better, gave more character development there. Great stuff with Obi-Wan and Leia. Huge shout out to Vivian Lyra Blair. I just pulled up her name to make sure that we give her her roses. She really knocked it out of the park this episode. Yeah, like you said, Jeff, I can't believe I have to wait a week. I'm going to go fucking nuts. I'm probably going to rewatch this like twice. I've watched it twice today. I don't know if I can do another watch tonight, but I'll probably sneak a couple in before the next one comes out. Yeah, I was blown away. This is, I don't know if this is my absolute favorite hour of Star Wars television we've gotten so far, but it's definitely up there, dude. This is fucking fantastic. I'm going to go 9 laser gates out of 10.
All right. Another fair score. Definitely sounds like we liked this episode, but you can tell that from our discussion of it. I have nothing really else to say other than I love Ewan McGregor as Kenobi. I think that Leia did a phenomenal job in this episode in particular, but is growing on me in general. And I don't think that she was necessarily ever bad, but I wasn't loving some of, like we said, the editing choices in some of the scenes in episode 1 in particular. But again, we've said from the beginning, none of that is the actor's fault, and even if it was, that doesn't give anyone the right to even like comment on it because she's 7 years old. So my point is, she's grown on me as an actual positive of the series. She's a great portrayal of Leia, and she always was doing Leia things, and so people complaining about that were dumb, and we've said that. But I also just think it's good acting in general, and definitely for a 7-year-old, good acting. And like I said, that one line really stuck out to me in this episode where I was like, okay, this is sassy, and also like she's smart to say that, like, we love the Empire. And just was, I don't know, I loved it. So in general, I fuck with what they're doing here. I want more Kenobi content in general. I want more Ewan McGregor Star Wars content in general. I think that Darth Vader, I was a little bit skeptical on like if it was going to be bad fan service, because we've talked about fan service not being inherently bad, but it can be done poorly and it can be executed in not the best way. And I think so far so good on it, not really doing anything where they're just shoving it in your face for no reason. They have a good story here. They're doing things that make sense, I think, and things that make sense for the characters, and they're showing you aspects of characters that you haven't gotten the chance to see before. Easily the best episode of the season so far. I think it's going to only go up from here. This is what I wanted. Absolutely balls to the wall, 100%, no complaints, what I wanted from a Kenobi series. And this is like, when I was complaining about Boba Fett, it was never that I like had an issue with anything where I thought it was like I'm going to stop watching or anything, but it was me thinking that there was a better version of that show for my enjoyment level out there. And right now, I think that there isn't a better version of the show for me out there. This is what I want. And I think if we get some back to flashbacks, that would be fucking sick. And I'm not even someone who's seen that kind of stuff animated wise or read about that stuff. So it'll be brand new to me. And a lot of people will be like, oh, there's so-and-so. And I'll be like, okay, I believe you, but it'll just be cool.
Holy shit, it's Glub Shitto.
I wasn't going to say it. But yeah, Star Wars fans, I'm going to just reference that tweet from earlier this week that was referencing the classic Tumblr post. But Star Wars fans are never going to get away from those Glub Shitto allegations. They are absolutely 100% true. But they were saying that about Babu Frick. I was like, dude, everyone knows Babu Frick. Get out of here. You guys love Babu Frick. That's your grandmother's Baby Yoda.
It's a certified hey, hey moment.
Yeah, come on. But there was one where it was the Wookiee that everyone was talking about, and he had a funny name, and everyone was like, this is big time Glub Shitto.
I think it's Gooby, I think is his name.
Yeah, it was like, come on, man, that's a made up name. But people love that shit, and you know, you should definitely envy the people who can get that excited about certain things. I love Star Wars. I don't know it as well as that, but I definitely get excited to a certain degree about it, and this is my shit. This is made for people like Duncan Kenobi. So with that being said, if they can keep doing this, I'm gonna be balls to the wall fucking excited for what they have next. I'm already excited for part 4. I can't wait. Love that they did what they did in part 3. I'm gonna give it 8.8 George Forsman grills out of 10. And like I said, I've kind of talked about everything I love about it. I'm only giving it a little bit lower than you guys because I think it can probably even get better in terms of what they teased here. Get a little bit Qui-Gon maybe. There's some gaps they can fill in that I want to see that I don't even know that I couldn't tell you what it is I want to see. But once they show me it, I'll be like, yeah, that's what I was looking for. You fuckers know me because I eat the slop up when it comes to the Star Wars shit and especially when it comes to Kenobi and prequel trilogy shit. So this was made for me. I'm a little bit lower than you guys just because I think the ceiling's a little bit higher maybe. So that was our discussion though of part 3 of Kenobi. High praises from the GDT boys and high praises from our guest Jeff here. Jeff, thank you for stopping by today.
No problem, guys. If anyone wants to follow me, you can find me on my very immature Twitter name of Boof Bader Ginsburg, spelled just like you think, I guess. So thanks for having me on, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Always good to have you on, Jeff, man. This was a great conversation.
With that shout out, does that mean we can link it in the bio? We usually put people's shout outs in the bio.
Yeah, I think I'm over it. I think I've posted too many things that people could identify me, and I don't think I really care anymore.
All right. Well, we love to see it. Absolutely. Follow Boof Bader Ginsburg. It is exactly how you would think it was spelled, I think. Unless you're bad at spelling, then it's not how you think it. Don't spell it like that. You're wrong. But that does bring us to the conclusion of our episode. Again, thank you, Jeff, for joining us today. And also thank you to our listeners, both our recurring listeners and our new listeners. We appreciate all of you. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Thank you for stopping by, hopefully for all of our episodes, but if only for these Kenobi episodes, then stop by for part 4. We'll be releasing it next Thursday as well. So if you liked what you got here, definitely check out the next one. And then the next one after that, we have 3 more episodes of Kenobi to come out in the following 3 Thursdays. So we're about halfway there. I don't know why I said about. We are exactly halfway through this series right now. And we are excited to bring those to you. But if you're interested in more, I did tell you at the top of the episode what we do on GDT, where we have 4 episodes a week, 3 bonus episodes, and a full-length episode each week. And then 1 monthly episode that releases on the first Sunday of every month. That Sunday episode is releasing this Sunday for this month, June 5th. So that means 5 episodes this week, 4 regular ones, and 1 monthly one. Our next episode releases tomorrow, where we have an interview. We are very excited to bring you that interview, because on Fridays, that's when we do interviews with independent filmmakers and other people associated with the filmmaking process. Tomorrow, we are interviewing Australian independent filmmaker Levon J. Polinelli, who is in the midst of shooting his next feature film and has a Kickstarter out right now. If you've been following along on our social medias, you've seen us post about that, and we'd love for you to chuck in a buck and help them out. So if you have any spare change, check out that Kickstarter. We will be sharing it in the future as the days go on, but we've already shared it a couple times, so check it out. That interview is coming out tomorrow on Friday. That's our full episode for the week. Then we have our MCU episodes that release every Tuesday, but this week's episode is postponed till this Saturday. So we have Iron Man 2 on Saturday, where we are discussing that film with the MCU squad. That's myself, Jalen, Mac, and the host, Chris. Then on Sunday, we're talking about Top Gun Maverick with the Sunday Movie Squad, which is myself, Kari, John, and Stevie P. So stay tuned for those episodes as we wrap up the end of the week. And then on Monday, we continue with our next week, where we have the Monday bonus episode, Tuesday bonus episode, Thursday bonus episode, and Friday full. full-length episode. That's our upcoming schedule, so stay tuned for all those episodes, and be sure to check out our back catalog of past episodes as well. You can find us anywhere on any podcasting platform. That's right, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the free ones. We're available. You can find us by searching the letters GDT and subscribing to us, and also leaving a nice 5-star review. Folks, the episodes don't sound as good if you don't leave a 5-star review. They become a little bit muffled. I don't know why they do that to you, but you have to leave a 5-star review if you want it to sound extra good. That's not true, but if you want to leave a 5-star review, we do appreciate it. We love them, and they make our day better. So take a second out of your day if you're feeling really nice and leave a 5-star review on GDT on any of those platforms. You can also find us on social media by following us on Twitter and Instagram at GoodDataPod and on Facebook at GDT Podcast. We post all our episodes there, so you can stay tuned for those there, and you'll never miss one. That is all for this week, folks. Like I said, stay tuned for all our future episodes and check out what we have in the past. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
As always, thank you for tuning in, folks. We love you. We'll see you on the next one.
Never going to beat the club shit-o allegations.